PT Pintcast is brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offers continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, six PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding student internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what the IHL can do for you and support your professional development. Go to brooksihl.org.
All right, continuing our coverage at CSM, it's the Big Dance and the Big Easy for physical therapy. In this episode, we talked to Rich Willey. Love what Rich puts out there in social media and in presentations at CSM about running. Plus, talk to Ellen Hillegass, an expert, as you'll come to find out, on cardiopulmonary physical therapy. The first round is powered by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs seeking certification and personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training. Plus, the equipment you need to apply it. Check them online, owensrecoveryscience.com.
The best conversations happen at happy hour.
Come on.
Welcome to ours. This is the PT Pintcast.
Gotta go hard or go home.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours, a happy hour with 17,000 physical therapists, continuing our CSM coverage here 2018. In New Orleans, which I was told by a local is actually pronounced Nawlins, so I said it wrong already. On the show, somebody I've kind of followed on social media for a while there, because I like to consider I was once a runner, and I'm trying to be that guy again, Rich Willey. Rich, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Just hot off of a talk. You literally come in right from a talk you gave here at CSM.
That's correct.
Who are you with? You were with...
I was with Jeff Taylor Haas of Cincinnati Children's, and then Blaise Dubois. He's from Quebec City. He's from the running clinic, and myself, and we had some research presentations before that. And we were talking, and we were basically doing a debate on, do running shoes matter more than running mechanics, and where does that fit into our kind of our treatment paradigm, or treatment plan with for an injured runner?
So what's the answer? No, you're gonna say it depends, because, and here's why. I mean, as a person who's, you know, on social media, there's, I'm not going to say who because I don't want to give them any props, but there's, you know, orthotic companies will say, just put this in your shoe and you're done. We solve your problem. Or get a new pair of shoes and this solves your problem. But we know, obviously, it's more complicated than that. You can't give me a direct answer because there is no direct answer.
No. Yeah. So the way we kind of look at least I do, the way I look at running orthoses and patellar taping and even gait retraining is that these are all adjuncts to our bread and butter, which should be for treating the injured runner, is going to be counseling on training loads and also strength and conditioning. Very good strength and conditioning principles. And you know, if anything, I think that those are two places that we as PTs can really improve. But I think the way to look at that is, the strength and conditioning is there to improve your tissue tolerance, and the gait retraining and the patellar taping and orthoses are there to kind of reduce some of the biomechanical loads on someone so that they can, again, increase their exposure to loads. And then eventually we can take the gait retraining away, the orthoses away, and also the patellar taping. These are not permanent changes that we need to make in someone.
Right. Yeah, I've had the movement meister, Shante Cofield, on the show. She's part of our sponsors, Rock Tape. And they say, she says flat out, this does not fix anything. Mm-hmm. This facilitates you being able to fix yourself because ultimately the body heals itself. And
exactly.
We're there to facilitate that, much like an orthotic, a tape, a shoe. When you get guys like that in the room, guys who specialize in running, do you always ask each other, hey, what kind of shoes are you, what are we looking at now? What do you wear when you run?
Yeah, so that was what we were kind of debating. Blaise, Blaise is coming from the minimalist kind of point of view. And so he's recommending individuals when they can, particularly younger individuals, move into more of a minimalist type shoe. And for me, my philosophy on that is, running what makes you happy. You know, if you like running in a highly cushioned shoe and it can get you out and help you run more, that's awesome. If you can run more in a minimalist shoe, great. But it's not for me to sit here and tell you that everybody should be running in this type of shoe or should be trying to move to this type of shoe. Just because clinically, I've seen a lot of people get injuries when they make changes for no good reason. And I think a lot of times when people do make changes in shoes, a lot of times they might read something in a magazine or on social media or something like that and make that change based off what they're picking up.
And that's what that word that sometimes can be looked at as in a dirty way, which is marketing. If you believe a billboard is going to give you the answer, the definitive end all answer to your problem, no. You know, if you see a billboard that says think about this, or here's what we need to look at, because we are all individually different. You know, we're just a bunch of snowflakes, Rich.
Yeah, just a bunch of snowflakes.
But
exactly.
What works for you might not work for me. So, you know, when you're a PT, say, you know, first of all, what works for you? And then let's see why or why mm-hmm. it isn't working for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that going back to your point is us being all being snowflakes. I mean, you know, I think that when we look at even changing a runner's gait, like for instance, step rate, you know, that's an easy thing. If someone wants to get into doing some gait retraining, that's a great place to start. It's not a hard thing to do. We need to be able to give some sort of feedback. So we recommend using a wearable device that can give you real-time feedback on your running cadence. But we don't tell people how to do it. We don't tell people to, you know, land with a flatter foot strike. We don't tell them to land with more knee flexion or anything like that. We just let them kind of organically come up with a solution to that problem, which is increasing your step rate 5 to 10%. And the reason why we do that is because everybody's got their own individual anatomy, their own injury history, and they need to come up with the best solution for them. And I also think too that experiential learning of making, trying different solutions out is how we learn better, whether that be in the classroom or when you're trying to learn a new running gait. So I think those things are important. And so one of the things that I always try to, you know, impress upon clinicians that I work with is, let's stop telling runners what to do so much and let them try to figure out some of these problems on their own. And I think in the end, I think the changes might be a little bit more lasting and more effective as well.
As a student, all I wanted to do when I was in clinicals was Q, 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 over Q, over. And that's what I was doing. And then I watched a bunch of people that I consider very, very good PTs. I'm like, but he's not doing anything. She's not doing anything. But it's the really little things that they are doing and the whole bunch of things that they're not doing, which is like, you know, speed your feet up a little bit. Like, what's that mean? Like, how do I speed my feet up? Like, you're going to figure it out. And that's the best cue, non-cue to kind of give someone is that less.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so I think that, you know, going along those lines, a lot of times we think that like more experienced runners will be able to change their movement pattern quicker. But actually that's the exact opposite, because they have a more ingrained movement pattern and it just takes a lot more practice for them. And so it may be a bit of a challenge for them initially. And we should have patience with our runners or anybody that we're working with, somebody maybe who's had a, you know, like a CVA or something like that, and allow them to come up with these solutions on their own. Because, you know, again, if we're over cueing someone, it can be very demoralizing to the learner. And if we, you know, end up demoralizing the learner, they're not gonna be motivated, yeah. And they're gonna start tuning you out for sure.
Yeah, this is the thing that, you know, everybody, you know, depending on like all the cool books that I've read, I'm Born to Run, yep. You're supposed to be able to do this thing. You know, we're built for it. You know, you go into who's the guy from Harvard, the bio?
Dan Lieberman.
Mm-hmm. I actually emailed him, and he was nice enough to respond back because I was trying to like get a
yeah,
quote from
he's
him
great.
For a paper.
Yeah.
He was awesome. Dan Lieberman at Harvard. And we're born to do this. And here's all the biomechanical, the nuchal ligament.
He's right. I totally agree with what he's saying.
I had Irene Davis on the show, you know, mm-hmm. not long ago, and she's foot, man. She could tell you everything mm-hmm. about that foot. And then I go, but we're supposed to be able to do this, and we mess it up somehow. But let's not over mess it up by over cueing. That's the thing that I picked up.
Exactly. So we need to be really careful that we're not over correcting people. And I think that, sure, there is probably an ideal. And I would say, I mean, if I could go for runs in barefoot, I mean, it looks amazing when you see a really yeah. accomplished barefoot runner. I mean, they look so smooth and
floating
and so forth. I don't look like that when I run. And I don't know if there's anything that will help me, you know, look like that when I'm running and like no amount of practice. And I also know I'm in my mid 40s, and we know too that particularly males, when they get to their mid 40s, their Achilles tendon in particular becomes less stiff and becomes less adaptable, you know, to changes in training loads. Whereas when you look at adolescent runners, that's when you have the best potential to change tendon structure is when we're adolescents. And so, yeah, so if you're looking to move someone into more of a minimalist shoe or even have them start running barefoot, doing that when they're teenagers is the absolute best time, because they're going to adapt the best to the loads. But we have to be really careful with older runners, and particularly ones that are a little bit elevated risk for certain tendinopathies and so forth. We should be very, very slow with them, because we the last thing we want to do is do harm to a runner. And I've seen that a lot, particularly in runners who get transitioned too quickly from the shoes they've been running in for their whole life.
Well, give people your background. You're from where?
I'm originally from Colorado. And so I grew up in Western Colorado, and then I went to Ohio University. and I got my bachelor's degree in exercise physiology and then my master's degree in physical therapy. I worked as a PT for 8 years. I moved back to Colorado and worked there for a while, and also worked in the Ohio region for a while. Then I went to University of Delaware and got my PhD with Irene Davis, and which is really awesome. And Irene and I are still super close. And even though we kind of go maybe a little bit different directions on the barefoot versus, you know, shoe stuff, I've learned so much from her, and our research really complements each other really well. So I'm now at the University of Montana. I'm an assistant professor there. And so we have a running lab that we're starting up. So I see a lot of runners from Missoula, and Missoula is one of the absolute best running communities I've ever had the privilege to be a part of, and it's great. So yeah, so that's what I do. I work in our physical therapy department and teach first and second year PT students, and a little bit of third years as well. But I teach them how to do gait analysis and how to do like measurements, like your manual muscle testing and goniometry. But I also teach in the foot and ankle curriculum as well. So it's a great place. I'm happy there.
What city is
Missoula?
That's the name of the city.
Yeah, it's Missoula, cool. Montana.
I like it.
Yeah,
and Irene is just so nice. Like, she's terribly smart, but she's also, like, really, really nice.
Is,
like,
Irene is amazing.
Yeah.
She is amazing.
All right, three questions. You ready? We're here with Arias Medical Staff, and these guys do short-term, long-term assignments anywhere in the U.S. If you could go somewhere and be a PT for 13 weeks, no strings attached, where would you want to go?
I would go to Scandinavia. Absolutely. Yeah. It would be a toss-up between Norway and Sweden, but when you think about physical therapy, that is, like, those are the major leagues. When we're talking about being a physical therapist, physical therapists are elevated so much more than they are here. I mean, we have a great role, and when it comes to healthcare, but there they have such a larger role because of their healthcare model. It's great,
and that just comes from queuing and inserting yourself in a conversation for decades, for generations, and then that's where we want to be here. Of course,
sure,
it takes time.
Well, the other thing I might add, too, is I think if you want to understand tendon injuries, whether it be tendon ruptures or tendinopathies, man, they're leading the world. They're the best in the business at
it. That's cool. Second question, what's something that you read that inspired you? Doesn't have to be PT related at all. Could be anything.
Oh, so I just finished a book. So one of the groups I'm starting to work with are the Wildland Firefighters in Missoula, Montana. Yeah. And so I just finished a book called Young Men in Fire. And it's talking about smoke jumpers, which are, these crazy. Are wildland firefighters that parachute into the wilderness to put out forest fires. And they're amazing people. And this is, it's written by Norman McLean. And he wrote A River Runs Through It, which is a book about fly fishing, which is also another thing I really like doing. And, it's just really amazing that just what the body is capable of and just the drive that these wildland firefighters have. It's pretty amazing.
They jump out of an airplane with a parachute on their back, a hockey helmet on their head.
And about 100 pounds.
And a shovel, and that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. Chainsaws. They're jumping out of planes with chainsaws.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
And they have a face mask, and they land in the trees often. It's really amazing. And they're some of the most fit people you could ever imagine. There's a big mountain in Missoula. It's called Mount Sentinel. And the guy who holds the record for running to the top and then back down is a smoke jumper. And you have to be really fit because sometimes you have to outrun fires.
Sure. And fire's fast.
Fire is very fast.
Third question. Who's someone the audience should know more about in the field?
Peter Maliaris.
Okay.
He's a researcher from Australia. He's a tendon researcher, and he is very soft-spoken and quiet. But, man, that guy's stuff packs a punch. And he has a wonderful tendinopathy webpage. And he's just a great researcher when it comes to patellar and Achilles tendinopathy. He just really knows what he's talking about. He understands loads really well, and he understands how to mimic those loads with our therapeutic exercises. I think he does a great job. And I think in the United States, I think that's something that we as clinicians can get a lot better at, is how can we try to mimic loads a little bit better in our patients so that when they go back to sport, it's not a novel experience for them, that they've been experiencing these sorts of loads during their rehab process. Right. He does a great job with that.
Love that. I want to thank our friends from Arias for having us out at the booth here at CSM. You can find them online, AURUSmedical.com. These guys I love the fact that they came to sponsor the show early because they were like, here's what we do. We want to be on your show. Great. What do you do? We find PTs jobs. I'm like, that's pretty cool. PTs are big fans of working and doing the thing we want to do. So anywhere in the 50 U.S. states, they'll get you hooked up. AURUSmedical.com. Last thing we do on the show, parting shot.
This is the parting shot. Powered by Optum Manual Therapy.
Taking the orthopedic clinical specialty examination? To pass the OCS, it's important to understand clinical prediction rules, clinical practice guidelines, and recent research. Optum Manual Therapy has the premier OCS prep course that gets you from start to passing step by step. Test out three free study guides right now at OptumFellowship.com.
So you got one more. You got the stage. You got your soapbox. You can say anything you want. What's something the audience should hear from Rich Willie?
If you're not strength training, start.
Done. Drop the mic. Walk off stage. Well, don't drop that mic. That's my mic. But drop the mic. Walk off stage. Rich Willie, give him your Twitter handle so people can follow you.
Yeah, it's at rwilly, W-I-L-L-Y, 2003.
Appreciate you coming out to CSM, spreading the knowledge about running. Love following you on social media. I think you do great things, Rich. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
This is the PT Pinecast.
The Physical Therapy Outcomes Registry.
Brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.
It uses data from the profession
for the profession
to help you elevate your patient care, visualize your value, and define your future. The Outcomes Registry collects and aggregates electronic health record data from practices to help physical therapists make well-informed clinical decisions and track clinical outcomes against nationwide averages. By joining the registry, you'll gain a critical tool to demonstrate the value of physical therapy. It's easy. It's fast. It's the future. Find out more online now at ptoutcomes.com.
That's ptoutcomes.com.
The Physical Therapy Outcomes Registry.
Brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. Our next guest is an experienced educator and clinician and a dynamic teacher, adjunct associate professor at the DPT program at Mercer, Western Carolina, and Toro, president of the cardiopulmonary specialist and instructor of continuing education programs across the country, Ellen Hillgass. Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Excited for you to be here. We connected, I don't know, a couple months ago.
Yes.
And excited to talk about something we talked a little bit about, a little cardiopulm. We've had some people on, but I like when people are passionate about the things that they do. And knowing you for about 30 seconds now, I can tell that you're passionate about what you do. So what's your story? I kind of gave you the quick and dirty, the statistics, but you know, what brought you to PT? How'd you get to where you are?
So what brought me to PT was I looked at everything else and I followed a PT and I fell in love with what he did. He was a home health therapist and worked in a small hospital. And then in PT, I rotated around and I found that I didn't know enough about cardiopulmonary. So I said, I can't work with these patients if I don't know about this stuff. So I went back and got my master's at Emory in cardiopulmonary physiology. At that time, we didn't have DPTs.
Yeah.
I'm from the dinosaur years. So then I worked in cardiac and pulmonary rehab, and my most unstable patients were the regular floor patients.
Really?
And unstable home health patients everywhere else. And so I started to see a niche out there. I then followed into teaching, and lo and behold, I found I'm not a teacher full-time.
Yeah.
I'm better as a clinician, a resident mentor. I've started a residency program.
Yeah.
And I'm good as a clinician with my residents, as well as an adjunct professor.
Okay. You're also an editor.
Yes. I have a book. I have the number one book that's being used in cardiopulmonary programs, according to FSBPT.
That's pretty cool.
And that's the one they say they use all the questions
right.
for.
So if you're going to buy a book, what's the title again?
Essentials of Cardiopulmonary Physical Therapy, fourth edition.
What's it like writing a book? Literally writing the book on cardiopulm physical therapy.
You
like,
kind of get sick of cardiopulmonary.
It's like, if you like riding bikes, maybe don't open a bike shop because you're going to like riding bikes a lot less or never want to do
it. But you know what? You learn so much when you do a book.
Yeah.
Because you have to get more updated right. on the literature in everything.
Yeah, and you're in the fourth edition, so it's got to be...
Fourth edition, so it's tweaking things and adding the new stuff. So the basics don't change,
right?
But all the technology changes so fast.
So
and the research changes
right.
fast.
Right, so book, very, very big scope, very all-encompassing, but also quick and easy, clinical notes... PT clinical notes. You worked on that?
I did that.
So is that one of those flip books?
Yes, it's one of those flip books with F.A. Davis.
I've had those.
Yeah.
I like those.
Well, that was really before apps came into being.
Right.
And so that was the answer for like what an app could be. Now, your app for PT clinical notes would be too big. Parts of that PT clinical notes could be an app, but,
right.
you know, we've changed. Technology's changed.
It leverages things. You know, right now we're having a conversation at CSM, and someone could download this in Denmark, you know, when we release it. And how did it get there? Well, technology. And I like to point out, like, what we're doing is spoken word. That's very basic.
True.
That's human.
True.
But the cool part is you can leverage it. So we're not doing anything super fancy. We're having a conversation. But that technology, as you said, it changes, and you get to leverage things and do it a little bit differently.
Well, so let me tell you about technology that I'm also doing.
Yeah.
So there's a huge need for not just education, but for continuing education. And it's very expensive these days to go to courses. So two of my colleagues and myself started a web-based education program, PT Cardiopulmonary Educators. And we do web-based education for continuing ed and for residency education. And we've now developed a core curriculum for entry level for all those places that don't have a cardio person to teach.
Right. And a lot of places don't.
Many places don't.
So you get to leverage that.
So this way you get a good core curriculum, and you don't have to throw someone into the class who doesn't know cardio. And there aren't a lot of us out there.
We had, I think it was, somebody came in and taught 2 or 3 days for CardioPalm. It was on rapid. The guy was on 11 from the minute he walked in. I had a classmate who literally missed like 1 day of school in 3 years. It was the first day of CardioPalm. How are you going to walk into the second day of CardioPalm?
But how much did you retain after 3 days?
Well, I mean, how much did I retain? A lot of PT school, you know. But like, but yeah. So your web based, you can rewind, stop, go back, revisit.
Or you could do a flipped classroom. You can have the webinar, have them watch it at home as their homework. And they come into class, and then you do a case, and you say, okay, and you have all the information. They've got all the information at their hand,
yeah.
And then they come in. And how do you all learn these days, you young people? You learn by listening to things, watching things, and not reading as much.
Sure.
So where an education book is very good, you all don't read that much.
I have a lot of heavy, as we'd say, leather-bound books that I rarely open.
Yeah. So that's where Cardiopulmonary Educators comes in to help all these other programs.
Yeah.
And so we've started in a couple of programs now, and the feedback from the students is, oh, this is not only helping in class, I can go back and review it for the boards.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a way to leverage, again, that technology for transmission of information you'd like in a way that I like to use the term digestible. I can digest this. This is a conversation, or this is a quick video that I can watch again and again, and all of a sudden there's that aha moment. In a room full of 38 classmates, I don't know if I would, if you were in front of the class talking, I don't know if I would stop you if I didn't get something that minute, because social decorum says don't just interrupt people.
Oh,
you know?
So you'd go back in a web-based
right,
education.
But you can do that.
Yeah.
And is there communication if someone wanted to reach out to you while they were taking, if they wanted that interaction with your program?
On these, we do live webinars,
oh,
but for the curriculums,
gotcha.
No, this is like already recorded.
Gotcha.
But they could give them the handouts.
They could always email you or something.
Oh, easily.
Right.
Easily.
That's cool.
Well, and so here, someone already came up to me, knows about our web-based education, has developed apps for cardio, and they want to put them on our web.
That's cool.
And she says, I don't know how else to get the word out. I've developed these. These will help people. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, yes.
You're like, I have an idea. I know how to do that. That's awesome.
And apps aren't that easy to make.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
And again, my soapbox is always find someone. You could spend the time. Right now, Ellen, you could go take classes on how to develop apps. Or you could find someone who loves to develop apps, has already taken those classes, is really good at it, and it's going to save you years of time and get the information out there. But they don't know what you know, and you don't know what they know.
Yep.
So
it's a match.
Team up.
Yep.
So the Catherine Worthingham APT Fellow Award, how does that come about? How does somebody win that?
So I'm a fellow. So you actually have to be nominated, and there's actually a committee that reviews whether you meet the criteria. And there's only about 20 people that are put up per year. And so it's a huge honor.
So only 20 a year get nominated or actually get put up for voting?
I wouldn't say everyone gets it, but 20 to 30 nominations actually go in. And so somewhere less than that, typically, or about that, get it.
What'd that mean to you?
I felt like I died and gone to heaven.
That's great.
I was, you know what it was? It was like people really respect what I do. And I guess I have done some things. Sometimes you don't see it because you're going along and you're doing things that you love to do. Like, you know that. You do things you love to do and you're actually getting recognized for all that you did. So That was nice.
What else are we doing here at CSM? Doing some speaking as well.
Well, my former residents, three. I've had three former residents. All three passed their boards. Two got it last night. And they all gave a presentation just before this.
And what was that on?
And that was on defining critical care. It was all on advanced critical care techniques. They were phenomenal. And then I'm on tomorrow. My colleague and I are doing the venous thromboembolism talk in the morning. He and I wrote the guidelines with a committee, and that was published in 2016. Then from 11 to 1, we're doing a CCS, cardiopulmonary specialty prep. And then from 3 to 5, I'm doing a talk with a colleague from Duke, his resident, and my former resident, on interstitial lung disease.
Wow. Who is that? Who's that at Duke?
Because we're going Sean down Lowers. There.
Okay. We're going down to Duke in a couple of weeks to do a live show. So the faculty is going to be on stage, and the students are a live studio audience. It's the North Carolina Student Special Interest Group Conclave. They just threw their own conclave, which is pretty innovative for students. They just said, we want a conference. And Kyle Covington from Duke said, great. I'll help you make it, but you got to do a lot of the work, which is what a good facilitator teacher does. As they said, great, I'll help you, but I'm not going to do all of it for you. So we're going to be down there at Duke.
You want to come do one in Atlanta?
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you want to go?
Well, I'm at Mercer.
Let's do Mercer.
Let's do Mercer.
We just recorded it. It has to be true.
Okay.
We ask everybody on the show three questions. Are you ready?
Okay.
So from Arias Medical Staffing, that's where we are right now in the Arias booth, our friends there. They help PTs find jobs anywhere in the 50 U.S. states, anywhere you want. Short-term location can also turn to long-term. AriasMedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S Medical.com. First question I always ask, since Arias can get you a job anywhere in the U.S., if you had to go and be a PT anywhere you wanted, you had carte blanche, go anywhere you want for 13 weeks, no strings attached, where do you go?
Either California or Hawaii.
Yeah, can't miss. Hawaii is easily the... And they have positions... Everybody asks all the time, but they can't possibly have positions in Hawaii. They do. So that's the number one answer. Hawaii, Alaska, Colorado.
I had a feeling. Oh, no, not Alaska. I have to have sunlight.
Yeah.
I have to have sunlight.
You could go the time of year when it's all sunlight.
I still have to have sunlight.
Second question is, what's something that you read that really inspired you?
Oh, that's difficult. I'm going to go way back.
Go way back.
Stephen Covey.
Okay.
7 Habits of Highly Successful People.
Yeah. I read that back in the day.
It made a difference in my life at that point. I was working full-time and getting my doctorate full-time, and I was stressed out the kazoo.
Sure.
And so one of the things was sharpen the saw.
Yeah. Are you chopping wood or are you sharpening the axe? That's the thing. You can't be doing both at the same time. You got to make sure you do it. Third question, who is someone in the field of physical therapy that the audience should know more about? Who's somebody out there you want to kind of give kudos to? Who's someone we should know more of?
Can I say three people?
You can, yeah. Are they your former residents? Well, let's do it. Yeah, you can do that.
Okay. They just presented Erica Colclaw.
Okay.
Stephen Ramsey.
Okay.
And Tiffany Haney.
Yeah.
All three are rocket stars. They're the future leaders. That's what residents are.
Yeah.
They're the future leaders of the organization. They're already doing research. They're doing high quality, top notch clinical practice, and they're also assistant teaching. What more can you ask for?
There you go. That's a pretty good. Write that down. That's a good endorsement. Whenever they want to go look for a job, just write that down or play this for a future employer. I love it. One thing we always ask is, why are you still in the field? What keeps you here?
My passion for cardiopulmonary and the fact that not enough people know, use it, etc. And I still think we need to get the word out there, and I'm just trying to get it out there in everyday practice.
Yeah, love it. Final thing we do when we're done with an episode, we do shots.
Yes.
Not that kind of shit. She got really excited. Not that kind of shots. Parting shot of wisdom. What would you leave? Let's focus it at students, since you work with your residents. You just brought them up. What's a parting shot of wisdom you'd point towards students who are coming into the field?
Probably my biggest pet peeve. Don't memorize.
Ooh. But we get so used to it. I mean, I just graduated a couple years ago.
Don't memorize.
We think we need to, but don't
do
it.
Well, they're so into PowerPoints. I don't teach with PowerPoints.
Good.
So I give them blank PowerPoints. And I give them learning issues and cases, and they have to come in and discuss the cases from the learning issues. And so we discuss it in class, and you learn so much more, because what do? We read charts. So if I give you a case with a chart, then what happens is that's what you're going to be doing in life.
Sure.
So there's more practice.
I like it.
And then when you're studying for a test, apply the stuff. Don't memorize it.
I like it. Ellen Hillegas, don't memorize it. Appreciate you taking some time out in a busy CSM and talking with us. Can't wait to hear more about people using your web-based service for cardiopulmonary education.
Thanks.
And Mercer.
And Mercer. Let's go. Let's set a date.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast's CEO, Jimmy McKay, and CBO, Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that. Our home on the internet. PTPinecast.com. Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.